This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hi, everybody. This is Eric Kura alongside AJ Strong. We welcome you back to a special interview on TealTownUSA.com, and it is always a pleasure to welcome in the play-by-play voice, excuse me, of the San Jose Sharks, Mr. Randy Hahn. Randy, good to see you. How was your summer?
Summer was fantastic. It's always nice to get away from the grind. It is a grind, regular season and then playoffs too. So it's good to do some traveling and visit with some family and friends and recharge. And now we're right back at it again after a photo day today and the kickoff of training camp coming up tomorrow.
Nice. All right. Well, let's get into it. Last season was a memorable season. And I can only think that broadcast of Game 7 against the Vegas Golden Knights was probably right up there in probably the most memorable game at the Shark Tank, but also one of the most memorable games you've ever called.
No question about that. I think all of us who were at that game or those who weren't at it and watched it on television, probably a large percentage of people who witnessed that game in one fashion or another would probably say to you it was the greatest sporting event they ever saw. I've done World Cup games. I haven't done a World Cup final, but I've done World Cup soccer games, and I've done numerous hockey playoff games and various other things in my career. But that one, I don't know that it will be topped. Game 7 against Detroit way back when Jamie Baker scored his famous goal was certainly memorable at the time because it was such a shocking outcome, but it didn't have the twists and turns and drama that we had in Game 7 last spring against Vegas. It was a phenomenal thing, and to think for 28 years the Sharks' rival, number one rival, has been the Los Angeles Kings. And in 10 minutes, it changed to the Vegas Golden Knights.
That's for darn sure. That's for darn sure. And just being in the arena for Game 7 for that game and for that period and a half, including overtime, was just unbelievable. Probably I've never heard the Shark Tank any louder than that.
No, it was a one-off. I the only thing that I can imagine that would be louder would be winning a Stanley Cup, and maybe it would take winning it on an overtime goal or something like that to recreate that moment of explosion. But I still go back and look at the winning play where, ironically, Mark Stone, the former Ottawa Senator, coughs the puck up to Erik Karlsson, the former Ottawa Senator, and then Barkley Goodrow goes and does what he does, and the guys skate to the glass. And you just look at the expressions on the faces of the fans in the frame of the video. And there's some Vegas Golden Knights fans on the glass, and they're stunned. And Sharks fans with their hands on their heads, people cheering, people crying, people screaming. There's so many different emotions wrapped up into that one moment. It might take a cup-winning goal to top that.
Well, one definitely thing I definitely need to ask is, will all the home games be played at home this season?
How do you mean?
I don't know if you remember when Jamie had a little vocal miscue towards the end of last season where he says a lot of those home games are going to be at home.
Yeah, they're going to be right here at SAP Center. Yes, as it stands right now, the plan is to have all the home games at home and all the road games will be away.
Oh, okay. Well, Lisa, it's also been announced that we have an addition to the broadcasting crew. I don't know, with the addition of Kendall Coyne Schofield, will that be more something for like an addition to Brody and Curtis, or will she be working in games with you guys?
She will be working in game. So she did appear on pre and post game live in the playoffs for a game or two last spring. The plan is for her to, as I understand it, be on 15 of the broadcast, and on all those 15 occasions, she'll be sitting next to me And when we're at home, there'll be three-person broadcasts, as we've done periodically last year with both Jamie and Brett Hedekin. So Kendall will be next to me, and either Jamie or Hedekin will be inside the glass, or if we're on the road, where sometimes we don't have access to the inside glass position because the home team is using it or the building configuration doesn't allow us to be down there, then there'll be three across sitting up in the booth. But we will we'll wrap our arms around Kendall in her debut at this. I mean, it's something new for her. She's dabbled in it a little bit. And it's, believe it or not, sometimes it's actually a hard job to do. So we're going to help her along, but I don't think the learning curve will be too steep for her. Clearly she knows the game and has played it at an extremely high level, and we're excited. I think I'm not letting any secrets out of the bag here. The Sharks organization has been looking for a long time to try and implement a female presence onto our broadcasts. And that's easier said than done, especially if you don't want just window dressing, if you know what I mean. The Sharks were very adamant in their desire, I think, to have a female component to the broadcast for it to be credible and for this to be someone who knew the game, knew how to speak the terminology and the lingo. And she'll learn the broadcast trick part of it along the way. That will come. And sure, there'll be a learning curve, but she knows the game. She knows how to see it and break it down. And that's exciting because I think if you look across the landscape in the NHL where there are females on the broadcast, that's not always the case. And I think the Sharks were waiting for the right person in the right opportunity. And we're really excited. And since the announcement was made, had a lot of feedback from a lot of fans. And with the exception of one or two, everything about it has been super positive. And let's face it, we're still growing the NHL in the Bay Area. We're 29 years in now, but there's still a lot of work to do. And if we can bring more people into the tent of watching our broadcasts and becoming Sharks fans because we have a woman on our broadcast and one who's knowledgeable and who's still playing on the national team, and has succeeded at the highest levels, then I think that's great for growing our broadcast and growing the game, and we're all very excited about it.
Any word to adding Finn at all to any of the broadcasts?
No. He's probably barking too much to get some more time in.
Finn the dog. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I thought it was like an obscure Jonas Donskoy reference. Finn will definitely make an appearance. I'm sure you can bet on that. We'll find a way to work Finn in.
Well, and yes. How jacked are you and the boys to finally be getting a bobblehead?
That's cool. I got to admit, I got to verify this with Baker and Hedekin because. In Jamie's case, he played in the International League, the IHL, with the Chicago Wolves, and they won a championship. So I don't know if Jamie's ever been on a bobblehead. Maybe somewhere along the line he was. And, of course, Hedekin won the Stanley Cup. So I don't know, maybe there's a Hedekin bobblehead floating around out there. But I know I can verify for sure there has never been a Randy Hahn bobblehead. There was a bobblehead pin back in the day when, they went like, well, let's start out with a bobblehead pin of Hahn and Remenda, and let's see how it goes. And maybe 15 years down the line, we'll do an actual bobblehead. So that clearly was the game plan, and now it's finally come to fruition.
Well, I have both of those pins sitting on my shelf, and they will go right next to the bobblehead broadcasters when it comes out.
Yeah, hopefully not to be used in some sort of a voodoo doll
fashion. No. Okay. I will admit that I've been offered $200 for the pair of pins of you and Drew.
And
$200, no joke.
It was $190 for you and an extra $10 for Drew.
Yeah.
This opens up the opportunity for a whole new retirement revenue stream for me, myself, here. I can sell off my boxes of bobblehead pins on Craigslist.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. Any other additions or new items coming on to the broadcast this season?
You know, we just came back from the NHL broadcast meetings in New York. The whole team was there, and one of the things that we're going to see rolled out, and it's going to take a little while until we see it on our air, but it's the new puck and player tracking, the PPT technology. And we saw a presentation on it, which was absolutely fabulous. It's not 100% ready to go right now. I think you'll see it about midway through the year, and you might start seeing it first on the NBC and NBCSN games. But there's so much potential there for some of the coolest stats. For example, you'll have an ability to track players, their amount of ice time. And when a player's been, say, on a shift for over 30 seconds, there'll be a little color underneath his movement on the ice, which will switch to red. And you'll start to see a flashing red where, like, this guy's coming near the end of his shift. And, you know, he's going to have to get off sooner. He's going to be exhausted, which opens up the opportunity for fans to follow all kinds of cool things. There's going to be a way that you can kind of recreate the old glow that the Fox glowing puck had, but in a much more modernized and high-tech way. And we're going to see some of those things start to creep into the broadcast. You don't want to get, and there's a bunch of stats that go with it. I think the key is to not overwhelm with it, learn how it can be used as a tool to educate. But the stuff that we saw is fascinating. Each player will have a chip sewn into his sweater, and then the puck, of course, will have an embedded chip as well. And each arena will have a very sophisticated tracking system, which will then send all that data to a server, and then it's all broken down and fed back to the TV trucks. And it's really cool. So hopefully at some point this year we'll see a little bit of that come in. But I think the next season, the 2021 season, is when you'll see a lot of the broadcasters around the NHL really start to put it into their broadcasts.
Wow, that sounds like that could be really amazing, especially for those of us who have center ice packages, where you could immediately just pull up a menu and get a quick rundown of, you know, where people are, time on ice, statistics, yeah. All of that.
The interactive for the television viewer won't be there at the beginning. It will be pushed by the broadcaster. So in our TV truck, our producer will decide which stuff he's going to push out on the broadcast. When you go online, if you're watching a game online on your computer, I think you're going to have more ability to select a menu. But the TV viewer interface won't be there at the very beginning. I think that's something that they hope to be able to do in the future. Because I always felt when Fox had the glowing puck, and the trail, depending on the miles per hour of the shot, I thought it was a really valuable tool, especially for hockey fans in the U.S., because it erased that argument that some people have, that they have trouble following the puck. Well, now you didn't anymore. I always, and in Canada, it went over like a lead balloon. They hated it there because, you know, that's the number one sport in that country, and people there don't have any trouble following the puck on TV, just like neither of the two of you do, because you watch a lot of hockey. You go to a lot of live hockey. So the reference points are there. And, you know, following the puck is just second nature for us. But I do understand how it can be for less experienced hockey fans and new hockey fans. And I think it's a valuable thing. And when we get to the point where on your TV remote, you can add the glow, or you can add the player's name above him skating, which this new technology will allow the TV trucks to do. Like when Hurdle's skating, you'll see his name above it. So all of a sudden you're watching. The only troubling thing with that is eventually perhaps they wouldn't need announcers, because you'd be able to know who had the puck at all times. So
No.
We don't want that. We don't want to creep into that AI play-by-play type of format where it's all just computerized and there's no more people there.
Well, and something else I think it should be pointed out as well is that when Fox was trying to introduce that technology, whether it was adding the glow around the puck or adding the red tail to it when it exceeded 30 miles an hour, that also came when HD was in its, like, before infancy.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure. And I think HD went a long way to help people follow the puck, because our rink is basically the shape of a big screen. So that was a big, you know, it probably helped our sport more than any other, along with soccer, I would say. Yeah. It's become much easier to follow the puck. But I'm not going to lie. I mean, if I have the chance when I'm watching a game to play around with some of those things and do that, it would be fun. And the breakdown of the stats and the things like that, distance traveled, You know, we live in a valley, and Jamie Baker talks about this all the time, with a lot of people who are into math, and they're into numbers, engineers, and people who compute data. And it could be another avenue for us to attract another group of fans, the Silicon Valley engineering crowd that maybe comes to this country, even if they're coming from somewhere else, like Asia. Or, you know, India and places like that, where we have so many people coming into the valley and into our area that are numbers people. All of a sudden, they're going to have a sport where there's a whole set of data that they can enjoy and break down. And, people come under the tent for a lot of different reasons, but that might be one.
I can see it opening up new columns for fantasy hockey.
Yeah.
Play that.
Well, and here's the big one, gambling, because here's an example. Tomáš Hertl is in the face-off circle. Pick anybody you want of the Vegas Golden Knights. So you'll be able to see what Tomáš Hertl's statistics are from that face-off dot against that player in that game so far. So if Hertl's taking drawn sharks on the power play, and he's 73% against that other center that night, you know, we're going to get to the point here very soon where you'll be able to make a wager on whether or not he wins that draw right before he takes it. And that data will all feed into that as well. So it's going to be a revenue stream for the NHL, which becomes revenue for the players, because it'll all go into hockey related revenues, and the cap will continue to go up as more money comes into the system. So the wagering part of it, I think, is going to be a very, very big part of it. It's the reason the NHL, as we were told, invested more in this technology than anything even close that they've invested in any sort of technology before. It tells me they're looking for for it to pay for itself and to be profitable on the other end. And the only way I can see that really happening is through the gambling.
Almost like the next wave of revenue streaming for the league, which is unbelievable. Go ahead, AJ.
Well, I was just going to say, I really only have one more question, and that was just how excited are you to stop going to Arizona regularly and start going to Seattle?
Well, you know, I always enjoy going to Arizona, and I still think that will be someday a solid, good hockey market if they can get out of that location. The location is the problem. And if you look back at any of these arenas that were built, were premised on real estate deals. And if you remember back when they were building the arena in the Phoenix area, it was all about real estate. And we're going to build this arena and we're going to develop this shopping center around it and blah, 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 blah. And all of the things that were supposed to happen around the arena never quite happened the way that they were projected to. And that's what's happened in Glendale. Add to the fact that it's 45 minutes away from in traffic or an hour where most of your fans live. It's a real problem. Plus, you're trying to sell them beers and stuff. And then they're supposed to get in their cars and drive home for an hour. I mean, it just, the whole thing doesn't make sense. If they can get to Scottsdale, I think that's the winner. I think there's a great fan base there. The sport's been there a long time. The NHL's never really been successful at the gate on a consistent basis since they've been there, but the sport's been around for 30 years in that area. So it's not like nobody knows the sport. It's just the inconvenience of the arena. I think you've got the exact same problem in Ottawa, where they had a real estate deal, you know, and they got cheap land because they were willing to be the center piece for this development in this new area, which is like 45 minutes to an hour out of actual Ottawa, where all the fun is and where all the people live. And consequently, now you have Ottawa in the same dilemma. They want out of their building. They want to put a new building downtown because that's where people want to go for their entertainment. So it's not about that. I think Seattle's going to be great. I think the way the West, the Pacific Division will line up is going to be awesome now because the time zones are going to match up. And, our division is going to be, it's going to be tough for a long time. You know, we didn't lose Edmonton, so we've got arguably the best player in the league in our division in Connor McDavid, and Vegas is going to be good for a long, long time because of the signings they made and the way that team is constructed. And you never know year to year who's up and down. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun, and it'll be great to go to Seattle. I haven't really traveled there for work since way back in the days of the North American Soccer League, when the Seattle Sounders, the first incarnation of them, were playing there, and we used to do the Kings games in the old Kingdom. So it's a great city. I think that the Vancouver-Seattle rivalry will be fun to develop because the fans will be able to drive back and forth. It's about a 2-hour drive with a little border crossing. So, yeah, it's going to be good. I like the way it's set up. And, you know, too bad that we won't get to get that nice, warm, sunny break when we go to Arizona in the middle of the winter. Instead, we'll have ponchos on.
Well, and, you know, you talk about venue location. It feels like there's a local football team that could have chosen a little bit better in there where they decided to put their new venue. But I digress. But I am not looking forward to the fact that there will be a lot fewer Desert Dogs mentioned.
There will be. We'll really have to maximize the drinking game opportunities when they come our way. That's for sure. But everybody has. Everybody has at least two more seasons here to enjoy the Desert Dogs as the game exists right now. So go for it.
Yeah, we create one for the new Seattle team.
There you go. Which I predict they'll be the Sockeyes, by the way.
I think that's a solid name for them, too, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll have to come up with a reason to say Sockeye a lot.
Briefly, before we let you go, just briefly talk about the Sharks and what they look like coming into this season. I mean, Erik Karlsson should be fully healthy. He's got a brand new deal. You're expecting youngsters to take on a larger role this time around.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'll be honest with you. At the end of the season, if you would have asked me, is Erik Karlsson going to sign and stay? I would have said 50-50 at best.
Yep.
And the fact that Doug Wilson got that done is tremendous. He gave up a lot to get him. So it would have really hurt because of the assets that would have gone out the door. And there was an additional pick now that goes to Ottawa as a result of him re-signing. But, boy, you've got a cornerstone in place for the next 8 years. And then you've got Burns with his long-term deal and Vlasic. So you have the core of what ought to be one of, if not the best defensive groups in the whole league, set up going forward. So I think on the back end there, that's pretty exciting. And there's some holes to fill with, you know, some guys that have left there as well, like Justin Braun and Joachim Ryan. But if and when Schimmick gets to 100% and he's back in there, I think we have a pretty good idea of how good he can be and how he fits in. And he'll be a big piece. And we'll see if Dalton Prout, you know, he's likely to make the team, and then we'll see what happens beyond that from the guys that maybe were at the Barracuda last year or whoever emerges. You know, sometimes there's that surprising guy that just can't get himself demoted, because like when Vlasic broke in, you know, we all thought he was going to start in the American League, and Dave was kept going by, and there was no reason to send him down. And he ended up staying with the Sharks. And up front, I think it's going to be more interesting because of the absence of, obviously, Pavelski, Donskoy, and Nyquist, to name three that won't be around. So, you know, you're missing some goals. Pavelski, you know, regularly a 30-plus goal scorer every year. And not only the volume, the nature of the goals, a clutch goal scorer, you know, and it isn't always how many, it's when you score them that sometimes makes the difference. And, you know, Joe Pavelski, definitely a clutch player. So, you know, the Sharks are going to have to collectively make up for his absence in scoring clutch goals, leadership. And I think some of that's been addressed with the new captaincy. And then there's going to be opportunities. Can Dylan Gambrell now take the next step and become a full-time NHL player? Is Antti Suomela going to be able to start the season as he did last year in the NHL and stay in the NHL, or does he need more seasoning in the American Hockey League? And then you have Alex True, and then you have some of the other kids, Chmielewski and Blichtfeld, and so on and so on. Some guys that have had great junior careers but haven't played in a pro setting yet, not to mention the National Hockey League. And then some outliers like on defense, like Ferraro, could come in and surprise it. Does he probably need to be in the American Hockey League? I would think so, but you never know, just as we said. So there's question marks for the first time in a while, I think at this time last year. In fact, it was on this very day, photo day. I don't know if it's the actual date in September, but it was on photo day last year that the Carlson trade went down. And going in after that happened and going into the season, there weren't many question marks at all. It would just be like, you know, how good are these guys going to be now that they have Erik Karlsson? This time, I think it's a little different because of that absence of scoring on the wing, particularly on the right side, and finding out who's going to grab those jobs. There's jobs available. That's exciting for the organization. And if I can just address the Patrick Marleau issue, because I know that there's a faction of the fan base out there that really wanted Patrick Marleau back here and, you know, felt that it would be poetic for him to play out his career here in Teal. And don't get me wrong, I love Patrick, and he's been one of, if not the most important Sharks, you know, over the last 20 years. But when you sign Patrick Marleau and plug him into your lineup, you're telling a lot of players in your organization that are in that position, we don't think you're ready yet, and we're going to replace you with a 40-year-old player at the end of his career. And that sends shockwaves throughout, not just on the Barracuda, but to all your players in your organization that you've drafted and that you're developing and that might still be in junior. They're going like, whoa, there's barriers there. They don't think the young guys can get it done. And obviously Doug Wilson and his scouts feel confident enough about the quality of players they have at the forward position that at least going into training camp, they're willing to give these guys a shot to steal those jobs and take those jobs. And hey, this two things keep happening in this league. Every year for the last 5 or 6 years, the players keep getting younger, top scorers keep getting younger, and the game keeps getting faster. And we have a 40-year-old Joe Thornton, and that's great. To add a 40-year-old Patrick Marleau, that starts to become a little more risky, I think, if, and it has to be, the goal of the Sharks is, number one, make the playoffs. But after that, the goal is to win the Stanley Cup. So every move you make has to get you closer in your mind to winning that cup. And obviously, at least right now, and Patrick is unsigned and things could change. But right now, I think the Sharks want to give these young players an opportunity to shine. These young, fast, skilled guys who are, this is the way the league is going. And the Sharks are staying with that trend.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can potentially expect a little bit more from, say, Sorensen or LeBanc, who cracked it at 17. I think both those guys can reach 20. You had great years from Meyer, obviously Hurdle. For me, the big question is you had that great goal differential where you were plus 31, but 38 goals came from Pavelski. The thing that I kind of look at, can Jones bounce back? Because
that's obviously key. You know, I often tell people who aren't that into hockey, the goalie is the quarterback in football. If you've got a good quarterback, you've got a chance to make the playoffs. You've got a chance to win the Super Bowl. If you have an average quarterback, the odds are long that you're going to be in the playoffs, let alone win a championship. And it's the same in the NHL. If you've got an average goalie, oh boy, you got trouble. And especially if you're goaltending duo is average, and I think it's sometimes the numbers last year would suggest that those guys had an average year, yet the Sharks still got to the conference final, because when the games mattered, really mattered in the playoffs, Martin Jones returned to form, especially in that Vegas series, and then going forward. And so I think that the team has to play better defense in front of those guys, so that the high quality scoring chances are down over last year, and make it easier on them to make the saves that they can make. But I'm not really, really worried. I know it's a crazy position. Guys have had great years and then fallen off the map, never to return. And the reverse has happened as well. But I think we've seen enough of the body of work of Martin Jones over a period of years right now, going back to the Stanley Cup year, that there's a reasonable expectation that this guy is going to bounce back in a big way and have a good year for the Sharks, and hopefully the same for Aaron Dell as well, who didn't have the kind of year he wanted as well. But no question, that's going to be vitally important.
Yeah, and you mentioned that defense. Remember, the boogeyman's coming back behind the bench. So
yes, the Wookiee Whisperer. Yeah, so that'll be great. And Hey, it the two most exciting times in the NHL are the start of the season and the start of the playoffs. So it's all speculation now, and everybody's got the exact same record. And boy, because of the way the schedule is set up, what a great way to start the season. The Sharks finish the preseason against Vegas, open the season against Vegas, open at home against Vegas. Obviously, the NHL took note that this is a great rivalry, and that first week is going to be epic. I'm really looking forward to it.
And we're glad we have a great voice on our side to call all the Sharks games on NBC Sports California. Randy Hahn, as always, thank you very much, and we will chat with you down the road.
My pleasure. Enjoy the season. Enjoy the games against the Desert Dogs, and we'll look forward to the Sockeyes.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to another podcast from TealTownUSA.com. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for more San Jose Sharks content.